This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for October. Before I start, I'd like to send my regards to Brother Guy, the Pope's astronomer. I met him at the British Science Fair just recently, and he said it was nice to find the face behind the voice, because each month he listens to the Jodcast. And so, I mean, I knew we were covering most of the world. I didn't think we were getting quite so high up. But look, he's written a wonderful book with a colleague. It's called Turn Left at Orion. It's now in its third edition. I've got editions 1 and 3. And it tells you all the lovely things that there are in the sky to look at with binoculars, your eyes and a telescope. I do recommend it to you. So that's Turn Left at Orion. Well, we actually do have a very nice skyscape at this time of year. Fairly high in the southwest, we have that lovely group of constellations, Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquarius. They're bright stars, Deneb in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquarius, make up what is called the summer triangle. Down to the left of Cygnus a little bit is a rather sweet little constellation called Delphinus. It's not very obvious, you need a dark sky to see it, but with binoculars it looks very pretty, just like a dolphin leaping out of the sea. But then coming over towards the east and through the south, we have fairly due south in the mid-evening the square of Pegasus, the winged horse, the upside-down horse. And I'm going to come back to the square of Pegasus when we talk about one of the highlights of the month. What is not terribly obvious, but well worth looking out, is that just below the square, you see the head, it's called the circlet, of one of the two fishes that make up the constellation Pisces. That sort of spreads out into two, and to the lower left of that, we have the constellation of Cetus the whale, and down to the right of the circlet in Pisces, we have Aquarius. If you follow up from Pegasus and a bit over towards the east, you come to the constellation of Pegasus and up to its right, the lovely W-shaped constellation Cassiopeia. And the thing to do with binoculars is to basically look at the region between Perseus and Cassiopeia where you should spot a rather lovely so-called double cluster. It's a very lovely object in the sky. And again, we're going to come back to that in our highlights later on. So what about the planets? Well, it's almost a one planet month. It's not quite as bad as that, but it really is a superb month for observing Jupiter. It's actually risen in the east as soon as the sun has set, and at magnitude minus 2.9, it's really dominating the eastern sky and later the southern sky, and is visible for much of the night. Now, Jupiter takes about 10 hours to rotate, so if you were really keen, you could almost watch one complete rotation during the night hours. Have a chance to see the red spot move around. Now, it's actually a very good thing to observe with a telescope at the moment, for the simple reason that it seems to have hopefully temporarily lost its southern equatorial belt. And so whereas we normally saw one dark band above and one below the equator, at the moment, we see one is missing. That's actually helped make the so-called great red spot be slightly more obvious, so it's well worth looking for it. And of course, if you've had any sort of telescope, you can see the lovely little Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, what about Saturn? Saturn actually was in line with the Sun, beyond the Sun, on the 1st of October, so you can't really expect to see it early on. But at the very, very end of the month, let's say the 31st of October, it's going to be just visible in the morning sky before dawn, and in fact just below the 2.7 magnitude star Gamma Virginis, which is also called Porrima. So if you look with binoculars, you'll see a sort of a rather uneven double. They're only about a degree apart, actually, so they'll be really quite close. So it is perhaps worth just having a quick look at Saturn at the end. And one nice thing is that whereas over the last sort of 18 months or so, the rings have been virtually edge-on, they're now opening out and, in fact, have reached 8 degrees. So not only is a little bit more to see, But also, of course, Saturn is going to be slightly brighter overall because you've got more reflecting area. Mars and Venus, they're both perhaps just visible as the sun is setting, but they're very, very low above the horizon. I think on the 9th of October, Venus is very close to a very thin crescent moon. But almost you've got to look for the moon before the sun has set. And that's always a slightly worrying thing. Do not, with binoculars or anything, look anywhere close to the sun before it's set. So to be frank, although they're theoretically visible and will be visible from more southerly climes, where the angle of the ecliptic is at a higher angle to the horizon, I'm afraid where we are in the north, it's actually not really too worthwhile observing either Venus or Mars. Well, that leaves us Mercury. Now, a highlight of last month was a very good autumn apparition of Mercury, and that's when it sort of gets highest in the sky and best to see, and that was before dawn. Well, that's pretty well over, but in fact, for the first two or three days of October, then Mercury is still just visible, low above the eastern horizon just before dawn, and I think on the 1st of October is about 10 degrees elevation as the sun rises. So there is a chance to spot Mercury if you haven't seen it before. But probably it's best to wait until next spring when we should have a good apparition in the evening sky after sunset. Well, finally, what about some highlights of the month? Well, I've mentioned there's still a chance to see Mercury. So that's one thing. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, just put in night sky and Jodrell Bank, you should find it quite easily. I try and put little pictures and diagrams to show you what there is to see. So that's a possibility at the very beginning. I think the real highlight of this month is going to be the fact that we should be able to see a comet. We probably need binoculars, to be honest. It's called Comet Hartley, and it was actually discovered in 1986 by someone called Malcolm Hartley. It's not surprising. Its name is 103P, oblique stroke, Hartley. That P implies it's a periodic comet, and that's one that comes into the inner solar system regularly, in this case, every 6.5 years. This particular apparition is a very good one, because it's actually going to pass within 0.12 of an astronomical unit of the Earth. That's pretty good. And that helps make it easy to spot. Sadly, the time at which it gets closest, around October the 20th, the moon is really getting rather bright. It's near full moon. So it's probably best to observe it in the early part of the month when the moon isn't being such a problem. On the first of the month, it is very close to Cassiopeia. And that's something where I think if you look at the chart, you'll see exactly where to look. It's just, in fact, by a little V, the base of a V, which we're going to come to a little bit later on. It then moves across past the double cluster. I think that's on the 9th of October. And that should be a wonderful photographic opportunity. A little comet at about 5.5 to 6 magnitude close to the double cluster. It moves off over across Perseus, and then by the 20th, it's very, very close to Capella in Auriga, very bright star, but as I said, by then, I'm afraid the moon is beginning to be a problem. So I do wish, you know, it's a well worth thing to have a look at. I've been trying to say something about interesting objects on the moon every month, and this month I chose Mons Piton, and also a crater very close to it called Cassini. Again, there's a diagram to show you where it is on the lunar surface. It's an isolated little mountain, about 2.3 kilometers high and 25 kilometers across. And in fact, the picture I've put on the lower right, and even on my little chart that shows you where it is, shows the rather nice shadow it actually makes. And this, of course, is how you can measure its height. And from that photograph at the top left of my night sky page to do with it, I got my students to actually calculate how high the mountain was. And they got 2.4 kilometers, which is pretty close to 2.3. So it's interesting, we can measure the heights of the mountains on the moon and also the heights of some of the lunar, of the crater rims, by the length of the shadows they subtend. We do have a meteor shower this month. They're called the Orionids. And the peak is around October the 21st. But if you've been listening, you'll know that that's around the time when the moon is full. So I'm afraid this year, it's not really the best year to try and look for them. You may well, however, see the very brightest, and that would be in the hours before dawn. The radiant of the Shah, hence the name Orion, is in fact just up to the left of Orion. In fact, pretty much on the border with Gemini. They're interesting meteors because we think they're associated with Comet Halley. And they enter the upper atmosphere at about 41 kilometers per hour and can sometimes leave some very nice, what are called persistent trains, slightly longer lasting streaks of ionized gas in the atmosphere. In fact, the Earth intersects the orbit of Comet Halley twice a year, so we also see them in May, and the shower is then called the Eta Aquarius. So, sadly, not this year the best. Well, finally, we have a nice opportunity in the next couple of months to observe our nearest giant galaxy. That's the Andromeda Galaxy, M31. It's the 31st object in Charles Messier's catalogue. It lies between Pegasus and Cassiopeia. And there are two ways to find it. We sort of call it star hopping, so let me tell you what to do. Perhaps the most obvious is to start with the square of Pegasus and find the top left hand, or at least the upper left star, depending on the orientation. It's actually called Alpha Andromedae. And we start there. We move in the same direction as the square, the top line of the square, to one relatively bright star, not too far away. You then sort of tilt round to the right a bit, maybe up slightly, and go the same distance to another bright star. At that point, you turn sharp right, and you should see one relatively bright, not as bright star, not far away, at sort of 90 degrees from the direction you've been going. If you carry on the same distance as you've just come, you then should see a little fuzzy glow, which is the constellation Andromeda. And from a really dark sky with a good pair of binoculars, say 8x40, 10x50, you can make out not just the central bright core, but also some of the arms and the structure around it. It's a lovely thing to see. Now, if Pegasus is a bit low, that's a slightly harder thing to do, but in which case, Cassiopeia should be visible. And earlier I mentioned the fact is a W. If you take the right hand part of that W, that basically forms a V, and regard that as an arrow. Just below that on the 1st of October is going to be Comet Hartley. But if you follow down in that direction with binoculars, you should come across the Andromeda Galaxy as well. So that's a couple of ways of finding it. I love looking at it and other galaxies. I mean, when you do, it means the photons that are actually interacting with your retina, enabling you to see it, left there, in this case, about 2.5 million years ago. You are literally looking back into time.
Thanks for that, Ian. And from the other hemisphere, here's John Field.
Spring is a time of change in our evening sky in the southern hemisphere. The winter constellations of Scorpius and Sagittarius are descending in the west, and we see our summer constellations of Orion, Taurus and Canis Major rising in the east. At this time of year, there are a number of star clusters visible in the night sky with binoculars or small telescopes. Some appear as loose groupings of stars, and other appears as fuzzy golf ball shapes. The loose clusters are known as open or galactic clusters. These clusters are formed from clouds of interstellar dust and gas. As the cloud collapses under the pull of gravity, they fragment into smaller clouds that form individual stars. Depending on the amount of mass in the cloud, the number and type of stars formed will vary. In most clusters, a few very large stars will form first, along with a large number of smaller stars following behind. Once the gas has either formed into stars or been blown away by stellar winds, star formation ends. Eventually, the stars in a cluster drift apart and take their own path around the galaxy. Open clusters are found along the plane of our galaxy. Globular clusters appear as dense condensations of stars that may number in the hundreds of thousands or even millions. Their orbits are not confined to the plane of the galaxy, and they form a spherical halo around the galaxy, and there are about 150 of them discovered orbiting around our galaxy. The southern sky is host to a number of globular clusters. The two most famous are Omega Centauri and 47 Tucanae. Omega Centauri is visible to the unaided eye as a fuzzy star, not far from the bright star Beta Centauri. In binoculars you will see a central condensation with the outlying stars becoming thinner and fainter. Small telescopes reveal fainter stars and lovely chains of stars. It is about 17,000 light years away. 47 Tucanae is close to the Small Magellanic Cloud and is easily seen in binoculars and can be seen with the unaided eye from a dark location. It is closer at about 160,000 light years distance. It is more condensed than Omega Centauri, and comparing them both reveals differences in their shapes and structure. Other great southern globs are NGC 6397 in Ara, M4 and M80 in Scorpius, and M20 and M22 in Sagittarius. Although many are visible in binoculars, a 6-inch or larger telescope will reveal more detail. Most star atlases or astronomy magazines will show a number of easily found globular clusters that you can find. Most globular clusters contain a single population or age of stars. This indicates that globular clusters form in one intense period of star formation, after which no further stars were formed. It is thought that globular clusters are the original building blocks of many galaxies. Omega Centauri is an exception though, as it appears to be the core of a small galaxy that has merged with the Milky Way. The star cluster R136 in the Large Magellanic Cloud is thought to be a globular cluster in the making, so not all globular clusters are incredibly old. There is still much to be learned about these interesting objects. From objects that are thousands of light years away, we come closer to home to look for the elusive zodiacal light. Spring evenings in New Zealand are the best time to observe this phenomenon. Seen in the west as a faint conical glow after sunset, the zodiacal light is formed by the scattering of sunlight from the dust that orbits along the ecliptic. During the early evening in the spring, the ecliptic is highly inclined to the horizon and the Milky Way runs north to south, leaving the western sky dark after sunset. This means that the faint glow of the zodiacal light can hopefully be seen. The best chance to observe is on an evening with little or no moon and well away from city lights. Scan along the western horizon and look for a change in brightness from the darker background sky. Averted vision may help to spot it. It will also show up in a 30-second image with a camera on a tripod. In the evening sky at this time of year, rising up in the east, is the planet Jupiter as a lovely golden star, and nearby will be the planet Uranus, which is easily spotted in small telescope or binoculars. Well, that's all from the Dodcast here at Carter Observatory for October. I hope you have clear skies and good observing.